welcome to kind of season 7 of My Bloody Horror Cast.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. I mean, we've been away for a while, a long time, but you know, this is always our favorite episode to record each year, right? I mean,
oh, totally. It's been our one constant.
right. Whether we've been constant or not, it's been there. So yeah, it's our 7th annual Horror Oscars for My Bloody Horror Cast.
And I want to say, technically, we're still in a pandemic, but 2022 was a real pickup year for horror.
It was, after, you know, all the limited release schedules or delayed release schedules from 20 and 21. Yeah, everything really came back, and there was some really, really good stuff this year, as we'll talk about.
But before the awards, let's talk about some things we've recently watched. Carrie, right. You want to go first?
I will, because I have not watched much recently. So the only real horror that I've seen, you know, recently is Megan.
I too saw Megan, and I thought it was great. I had so much fun.
It's really fun. You know, it kind of plays on the whole Child's Play trope, killer doll slash killer robot. You could say a little deadly friend in there, maybe. You know, it plays on all those, but it makes itself, it's original enough.
Oh yeah, there's no mysticism in this at all. It's truly just what we feel the power of AI coming is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that it's PG-13. I'm actually a big fan of PG-13 horror when it's done well. I want as many people hooked as early as possible.
Yes. Well, a lot of times, you know, PG-13 horror tends to be the sort of teeny bopper stuff, and this is, you know, made for that crowd, but I think anyone can still enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's technically really, I mean, the effects are really excellent. You know, the acting's pretty good. There's some fun characters, and there's the dance sequence. It's not nearly long enough.
Oh, I know. I did want more weirdness, more of her like running like an insane predatory animal, more of the dancing.
Yes.
The singing I thought was bizarre and incredible.
Yeah, I would have liked it also to go a little bit weirder. I know they're, again, when you're doing a PG-13 movie, you have to make it a little more mainstream, which I get.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
It seems like it happens like that.
Yes.
But you don't have to. But yeah, so that was a really fun one. What about you?
So one of the movies I was most excited about this year was Infinity Pool. So I saw that, like, ASAP. It's Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son. And body horror is just a thing in the family. There are a lot of relatable things between the Cronenbergs. So there's this couple that's staying at a luxury resort. They end up meeting another couple who return to this resort every year. And one half of that couple is Mia Goth. So you know some sexy psycho shit's about to go down. I don't want to give too much away, but they get in some trouble when they leave the resort, and the movie just keeps rolling from there into this, like, warped, violent, hedonistic, sci-fi satire. I can't wait till you see it so we can talk about it, Carrie.
I know, I need to. That and Skinamarink came out around the same time, and those are two that are still on my radar. And I imagine we'll be talking about those, or at least one of those, probably later in the year as well.
I also saw Skinamarink, and I don't want to say anything about it until you've seen it.
Okay, all right. Anything else that you saw that you recently that you really liked?
Yeah, this was actually the tail end of last year, but I watched Dead Man's Letters from 1986. I actually screened it at Flickr. It's directed by Konstantin Lopushansky, who was Tarkovsky's assistant on Stalker.
Mm.
And I believe this guy has directed some other post-apocalyptic movies besides Dead Man's Letters, which I definitely want to check out. But basically, people are in this fallout shelter community. It's extremely depressing and extremely well shot.
Okay. That sounds about right for that cinema, yeah.
It's technically a Christmas movie, a Soviet depressing Christmas.
Yeah, that sounds right, too. love it. Yeah, all right. Anything else?
I've got a lot of stuff, but I'm going to save it. Let's roll right in.
Okay, all right. So, let's start with our first category.
Best costume design.
Mm-hmm. 2022. So, do you want to start with that stuff?
Sure. I went with, okay, also, a tradition that we always have is mispronouncing names. So I'm going to keep going with that in year seven. This is Momirka Belovic for David Bruckner's Hellraiser reboot.
Mm.
It was a little hard for me to wrap my head around this Hellraiser and these Cenobites because to me, they look more like beautiful aliens than they do fleshy, leather-clad BDSM nightmares. But the design is very, very beautiful. I'm glad they went with a fresh take. This kind of makes me think of what body modification will be like 100 years from now on another planet. Jamie Clayton as Pinhead, she looks like a work of art.
Yeah, that's one I did not catch this year, but having loved the original Hellraiser, and particularly in Hellraiser 2, I haven't seen a lot of the other installments in the series, but I feel like I need to watch the reboot.
I haven't seen every Hellraiser movie, but from what I've seen, this is the third best Hellraiser.
There's like 25 of them now, so... So my choice for the costume design was Stephanie Porter for Prey.
Nice.
And, you know, the film takes place in 1719 North America. Myers, one of the producers, is a member of the Comanche Nation, and she made sure that there were costume consultants on the set to make sure that everything was accurate historically to the period and the time. And it feels like that and looks like that when you see the film. You know, all the clothes that the tribe wears are all accurate to that time. And they just did an excellent job of really trying to recreate that atmosphere, which is great because we don't get a lot of representation from indigenous tribes in film. And
yeah,
so I love
totally
that when
don't.
No. So when you have a film like Prey that's done really, really well and accurately, I think it's just great. I think we should, I wish we had more of that.
Prey looked awesome. And I was very surprised by how much I liked it.
Mm-hmm. It was an excellent, excellent movie. And it's, I mean, it, you know, you could argue it's right up there with the first Predator and, you know, maybe Predator 2. It might even be stronger than Predator 2.
I'll give it this.
It's
the second or the third best Predator movie I've seen.
Yes. And again, there were a bunch of kind of fair to middling installments in that one as well. All right. So best score. And this could be original or not, or previous material.
Go for it, Carrie.
All right. So I loved Pearl. It was one of the last horror films from 2022 that I watched. And I thought it was fantastic. And they do a wonderful job. Tyler Bates and Timothy Williams, who also scored, Tyler Bates in particular, scored the John Wick movies and the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and a bunch of other films. But they do an excellent job of recreating the old Hollywood style scores, you know, the big, big symphonic movements that are at times ominous and at times just kind of beautiful. And it really, really added to the film in a way that, you know, there's a lot of great scores in horror films, but the score in Pearl is just as much a character, I feel like, as anything else.
Carrie, I'm not kidding. Pearl was my runner-up for this category. I basically said the same thing with less good words. It's just this sweeping, epic, orchestral number, like that theme.
Yes.
It does really feel like it should soundtrack an old-timey romance movie.
Yep, totally. Which is great because the whole time Ty West is turning that old Hollywood style of film on its head. That's kind of the purpose of the movie. And every element of it does that very well.
Yeah. My best score, I decided to go with Bones and All. It's Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Oh,
they're great. Everything they do.
I think I agree. I think in the 2020s, I am now a Trent Reznor fan. It just totally fits the dreamy but kind of dangerous tone of two young criminal misfits on this romance road trip. I loved it.
Excellent. That's one I did not catch, but it's on my list.
A lot of people didn't. I'm shocked that it performed so poorly. I think it was like a box office bomb.
I think so.
And it shouldn't be. It rules. Definitely one of the best movies of last year.
Okay. Okay.
Best visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I went with Crimes of the Future, which I really don't know anything about 2020's effects people, but this is a Toronto-based company called Rocket Science VFX. And the thing about Crimes of the Future is so many of the near future mechanics that are used, they're organic, but also machine. They're like these feeding chairs, this surgery contraption, and it kind of looks, I mean, they're definitely machines, but they also look like they could be puppeteered by like little critters. I thought that was awesome. Also, Crimes of the Future is Senior Cronenberg's return to body horror. So you get some nice gooey sexual orifices.
Yep, it's right up his alley. So I went with Joshua Petrino, and really you can say Damien Leone as well. He was an additional visual effects participant in that. So Terrifier 2.
I still haven't seen Terrifier 2.
It is. So one of my good friends and a fellow co-writer on some projects that we're working on dubbed it the godfather of splatter films because it's nearly 2.5 hours. It's a long film.
That's what kind of put me off of it, but I'm going to see it.
I mean, there's nothing like Terrifier 2 that I've seen in a while. I mean, yes, we've seen splatter's been around since Herschel Gordon Lewis, in the 60s, but this pushes the limits of what anyone wants to see on film. I mean, it is gory in the extreme, long, drawn-out sequences of gore that are quite disturbing. And the effects are, from what I understand, almost all... There's very little digital. Everything is just homemade, looks real, looks gross as hell. It's always something else. Terrifier 2 is something.
Yeah,
and Damien Leone, the writer and director, had a really strong hand in all the effects. And I believe in the original Terrifier, he was the main effects guy in that. So
the first Terrifier was on a really low budget. Is that true for the second Terrifier?
I mean, you can tell it's low budget, but they've obviously expanded. They've obviously had more money than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a really good job with making everything they can, putting everything they can on screen with a pretty lean budget, and it's a creepy movie, man. Yeah, it stuck with me for a few days after I saw it, for sure.
Clowns are not my thing, but the first Terrifier, that face stays with you.
It does. And that actor is a mime by trade, and he's just does a fantastic job in that role. So yeah, it's very, very, very interesting. So there you go.
I did have one runner up.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know if we were including TV or not. We talked about it a little bit. I guess maybe we shouldn't, but I wanted to throw in a Cabinet of Curiosities episode. Mm-hmm. It's The Viewing by Panos Cosmatos. It looks exactly what you want a Panos Cosmatos movie to look like. He did Mandy.
Black Rainbow.
Yeah. Why am I blanking on the name of that right now? Beyond the Black Rainbow?
Beyond the Black Rainbow. Yeah, I think that's it. Yep.
Those both look very retro, but in this... I don't know. Sometimes nostalgia doesn't work for me, but with him, it always works for me. And The Viewing's no exception. It looks incredible. Has a great cast. Charlene Yee is in it. RoboCop's in it. Eric Andre's in it.
Hey. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So, best cinematography. This was one of my favorite films in the year. It's going to come up here in some different categories for me as well. I thought Zach Cooperstein for Barbarian did a really good job of making that basement and that house look cavernous. Like, it seemed like it goes on for miles and miles and miles in the film.
Yeah.
And there's some great sweeping tracking shots where you're going through these long, dark, frightening hallways. You feel like you're never going to get out. And the cinematography is really instrumental in that film of setting the tone and just the dread of that house
mm-hmm.
through these three acts in Barbarian.
Totally. You know, I didn't even think about that. That is part of what's so unsettling. It's like there's this torture dungeon labyrinth beneath this formerly suburban home, and it does feel endless.
Yeah.
All those stairs.
And that's great camera work right there to me, along with great direction, which we obviously know from watching the film as well.
I went with Arseny Kachaturian for Bones and All yet again.
Mm-hmm.
So Bones and All actually reminds me a bit of Badlands. Plot-wise, you know, two young misfits, kind of anti-heroes, going on a road trip across the country.
Yep, same, Terrence Malick, yeah.
Same deal here, but it's also similar in this, like, dreamy, naturalistic scenery on the road, and it truly adds to the film. It feels so special.
All right. What is next? Best Supporting Actress? Do you want to start with that one?
Sure. Supporting Actress, I put down Kristen Stewart from Crimes of the Future as Tim Lin. Did you watch Crimes of the Future? I can't remember.
Still haven't seen it.
Okay, then I'm not going to say too much because we've got to talk about it later. But Kristen Stewart, she wins me over with every film she does, basically. And here, she's this uptight lady who's also, like, very horny. And I just couldn't get enough of it. I thought she was one of the stars.
Okay. So I really liked Tandy Wright, who plays Pearl's mom.
Oh, shit. In Pearl.
And I thought she was great. She either is of German descent, because she has a really good German accent when she speaks with it. I'm guessing English may be her second language. But she does a great job as this very cold, stoic mother trying to hold together this family where you've got some serious mental issues going on. You've got an invalid, she's got an invalid husband who somehow they keep around. He should be dead, but somehow he's still alive. I guess feeding him morphine every day will do that. And she does a great job of, at first you feel like she might be the villain in Pearl, and then as you continue to watch the film and it unfolds, you realize no, she's almost the character, she's almost holding the madness at bay, and she does an excellent job of playing that role of someone who's so tightly wound because she can't afford to let herself go at all.
Yeah, like religious,
mm-hmm.
uptight immigrant mother,
yep,
but also totally aware that something is not right with Pearl,
mm-hmm.
has the burden of watching both her husband and Pearl.
Yes. Sort of disintegrate mentally. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. All right. Supporting actor. What do you have?
Supporting actor. I also want to give one quick shout out to Rachel Sennott in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Oh my God. I was trying to work Bodies, Bodies, Bodies somewhere into this list and I couldn't figure out where to put it.
It's a bunch of really unlikable characters. Her character is kind of the most ridiculous. She is the most entitled. It's always me, me, me. She's way over the top. Yet there's a certain charm to her character as well, because she seems to be completely oblivious to her behavior. And I thought she was kind of the comedic center of that film.
I thought all of those actresses were comedy gold.
They were.
Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I went into it ready to be a bit annoyed, and I had a great time.
It's a fun film. It really is.
All right. Best supporting actor. So my runner-up, which is Ralph Fiennes in The Menu. He's this critically acclaimed chef who makes all of those artsy concept dishes and has a lot of theatrical backstory to kind of elevate the dining experience. He is a great character, and he plays it straight but for laughs. He's so over the top with the chef character.
He's great in that. I mean, he's, you know, here's an Academy Award winning actor, nominated for multiple awards as well. And he kind of takes this role and just has a blast with it. Yeah, just eats it up.
I wonder if we're going to have the same supporting actor. Maybe not, but I went with Justin Long in Barbarian.
Yep.
Oh my God! Yep. I thought so.
Yep.
That movie is so well cast. It takes your perceptions of different actors and roles they've had in the past. Justin Long shows up and you're just like, ugh. And then he is the comedic relief.
He is. And he is probably a better comedic actor than we give him credit for. I mean, but you know, his career is very strange. He goes from romantic comedies to weird horror and kind of all across the board.
He's done 50 million things. PC yes. Dell, like, you know, mm-hmm. he's all PC Mac. I mean, he's all over the place.
And he's usually just a sweetheart in most films. Kind of like he's sort of the slightly oblivious guy who wanders into a weird situation, or, you know, that the hapless romantic. In this one, he really comes off as the douchebag guy so well. He plays it really well.
And I like that it's someone like Justin Long, because if you had some chiseled, muscly model man, it wouldn't really feel the same. Like, it totally is problematic dudes who just seem like friendly and kind of cool, but also super entitled.
Yeah, have serious issues and weird attitude towards women. Yeah. So, no, he was great. Yeah. There we go. All right. We got that one.
All right. I think this is the best category of the year. Mm. It's best actress. I went with Mia Goth in X or Pearl. Honestly, both.
She plays multiple characters in both movies. She is my pick as well. I mean,
heck yes, Carrie.
How can you not? How can you not? She's fantastic. She brings Maxine and Pearl alive in very different ways.
I am so hyped for Maxine. We should yes. go see it together.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah, no, she's great. I liked Pearl a lot better than X. I liked the beginning of X, and I wasn't necessarily as crazy as the direction it went, but we are both big Ty West fans, so
yeah.
Even then, the movie is still good, and Pearl's just, it's just something else. It's the Mia Goth show all the way, and she's incredible. She has a great monologue near the end of it.
The styling of Pearl, too. I think I said this before, it kind of makes me think, if John Waters were an advisor, but Ty West was going to make a slick horror movie. Oh, man, she crushes. What a showcase for her. The conviction she has in humping that scarecrow, Carrie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was turned on, and I, you know, normally that would, you know, that would not do it for me. But
that film, that film is wild. Her temper tantrums, and then that freakish ability. I don't know how long it is that she holds that smile through the credits.
But you know that hurt.
It must have hurt so bad.
You know that hurt. And you know Ty West probably hired to do that 20 times. And she's probably at a certain point, she's like, I got to rest. I got to rest.
It's our Kubrick Duval moment.
I need to frown for a few minutes because I can't smile anymore.
Oh, man. I am so pro Mia Goth. I haven't seen her in anything where she isn't kind of a sexy psycho freak. And it always works.
It always works. It always works. My runner-up was Jessie Buckley in Men. I mean, she's
get
just,
out of town.
There
mine
you go.
Too.
There you go. See, just so y'all know, we do not share these with each other before mm-hmm. we do this. We come in cold, so that we can see what happens and where we match up. So this is real. There was no pre-screening for our picks before this.
None at all.
She's just a great actress. She's been in a bunch of things recently. We've seen her do a lot in the last few years. And everything she's in is great. And she's the heart and soul of Men for sure.
Well, you consider Men, it's got a little bit of the actor who plays her former husband, but it's essentially just Jessie Buckley and Rory Kinnear.
Yes.
And all this absurdity and gaslighting keeps getting thrown at her from 50 million different Rory Kinnears. And Jessie Buckley's having very rational responses. But all of her emotions are great. And they're not over the top. Like, they seem like such real person emotions in those bizarre, unreal moments.
She has excellent control in those scenes where you could easily over-emote, but she doesn't do that. She really holds it tight and does a great job. What a strange movie that was, too.
Ugh.
Alex Garland, who, you know, we're all big fans of, you know. Loved Ex Machina, loved Annihilation.
I thought Dread was great.
I didn't see it.
Oh, shit. Carrie, I'll rewatch Dread anytime.
Let's go. I need to. All right.
Best actor. I'm just going to go quick. I went with Daniel Kaluuya in Nope.
Mm.
And it's kind of another, even more so than Jesse Buckley. He must be the reigning king of, like, downplayed, like, keep it chill emotion, no matter what is going on.
That is true. Jordan Peele gets the best out of Kaluuya in every role.
I agree.
I really liked and had to go with, and partly because you see him about 50 million times in the movie Men, I went with Rory Kinnear. He was great.
Yeah.
And
I mean, which role? It's in.
I can't even pick a specific one. I mean, is it the bartender? Is it the weird? Is it the property owner?
I'm going with Creepy Kid. Creepy Kid.
Creepy Kid. Yeah. Yeah. That's so. If you haven't seen Men, it was a very divisive film. A lot of people weren't sure how they felt. And it's strange. There's a weird body horror element that comes into play near the end, which is absolutely bizarre. I think that turned some people off. I found it to be really fascinating. Great effects.
I felt sick. I was very, very, very into Men. But I get why other people didn't like it.
Yeah. But no, Rory Kinnear does a great job, and it's rare that you're going to see an actor play that many roles in one movie and pull it all off really well, make each of those little roles, even though there's not a lot of screen time for each of those roles, but each one feels very individual to itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, best director. Again, this movie kind of swept my awards choices this year. So, it's Zach Cregger. It's Barbarian.
Me too.
You know, here's a guy who's from The Whitest Kids You Know. Who knew that he'd be all of a sudden being called potentially the new big horror director in town?
I know. And it's so funny because before the end of the year, before all this rush of late summer through fall through winter movies, I would have said Jordan Peele for Nope all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it suddenly got switched. I was just like, I was really into Barbarian. I can't believe it's a first film.
I know. It's the direction's really self-assured. You get the sense that he knew exactly what he wanted to do. The creativity of having these three separate acts that show the house that we were talking about, this cavernous house that is also a character in the film, and showing that over the period, these various periods of time. Really neat how these story how it all ties in together, and you see this escalating toxicity throughout each chapter. It really was just something different. I feel like there's some great horror directors doing neat things where when we're in an era where everything seems referential to something before, and Barbarian kind of felt like its own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think we should just go right into Best Picture.
I mean, yeah.
Because I picked Barbarian.
I did as well. Again, people, this is there's no collusion here. we did not plan this. Yeah, for all the things I just said, it was one of the most original and interesting, and it took us all by surprise films of the year.
Well, I feel like I caught it at the first good wave, too, because everything like hit really strong with me. And I was surprised. I was on Letterboxd, the only social media that matters. And I have friends who think it's really overhyped. So I guess I get that, but also I don't. It's like three movies in one, and I was down for the entire ride of it. This movie played with all my red flag alarms, my natural distrust of Pennywise Skarsgård. I thought it was a super fun way to showcase different levels of problematic dudes. And no big spoilers for the one person listening who hasn't seen Barbarian, Aaron Wu. But if Aaron. A man I barely knew told me to calm down after I'd just discovered a rape dungeon, I would not stick around.
No. And that's what's great. Also, he kind of plays with those horror tropes of going into the place you're not supposed to go into. And it is frustrating. I had some friends who were really frustrated by that first act where she continues to go into this dungeon and then further down these hallways. But also, that's her character. Her character, she had to do it. She couldn't not search out the danger.
To me, it was like a choose-your-own-adventure, and it's someone choosing all the ways that put you in peril.
Right. It was almost, yeah, it was almost a, you know, a how-to of what not to do.
Oh, I know. Yeah, just warning sign after warning sign. But that kind of becomes really fun, too.
It does. You know, if I had a follow-up or a second choice for Picture of the Year, it probably would be Pearl for me.
It would because be Nope for me.
Okay. See, and that's where I was sort of on the fence about whether to call Nope a horror film because it feels very entrenched in sci-fi, but also the first half does have a lot of horror elements, even though those don't result in something horrific. They result in something more more science fiction. But it's a great movie, and it may not have made the list of these, but it is an excellent film. But I'm not poo-pooing your choice to include it. I was sort of on the fence and wasn't sure. But at the same time, I think is one of those films that it crosses through multiple genres, kind of like we talked about with Prey.
Yeah, I think it's right on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this before. We're always going to say if it's on the line, we're going to include it.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's fair. So like you said, what a bounce back year for horror films, and the ones that I liked this year, I really, really, really liked.
Oh, me too. And there were so many more that I thought were really solid, excellent movies that I just couldn't wedge in because we were spoiled for choice.
I had Black Phone as a second or third runner-up in some categories. I had The Menu showing up on some of those. I had even Deadstream, one of my favorite kind of low budget films of the year that could have shown up in some categories. So those were some of my favorites that didn't show up. And Smile. I thought Smile was excellent. It didn't show up in my Oscar categories, but great movie.
Yo, Smile. Okay, really quick. I watched that terrible Blumhouse Truth or Dare movie.
Yeah,
so when
I
saw the trailer for Smile, for some reason I'm like, oh, it's another one of these. And when I finally watched Smile, it was more like a throwback to early 2000s, like The Ring or...
It was.
Am I thinking The Grudge? Like stuff like that. Like something that just puts you in that type of headspace.
Yeah, the creeping horror, the, you know, all that. You know, you could even say it had a little It Follows in there.
For sure. Yeah. And it got me like 3 or 4 times.
Oh, yeah. So our mutual friend who's a photographer here in town for the local paper, the Athens Banner Herald, Josh Jones, and I went to see it in the theater. And there were only a handful of people in the theater, but we were all kind of, there were 2 people here, 2 people here, 3 people here. Everyone was sort of bunched up. And we all jumped at the same moments. And I looked at Josh at one point, and we were like,
that is the best.
It was a great, you know, sometimes that elevates a film. I don't know if it would play as well if I was just sitting here watching it at night by myself. But that is a film that you really should. It probably deserves to be watched in a theater or with people so you can really enjoy those jump scares because there are plenty of them.
Yeah. I also liked Fresh. I liked Watcher. I liked a lot of movies that came out in 2022. Mm-hmm.
And it looks like 2023, where we are now, is going to be a great year as well.
Oh my gosh. It's already off to a good start. Like mm-hmm. I said earlier, I thought Infinity Pool ruled. We thought Megan was a blast.
Yep. And this is going to be an interesting year because I was looking this week at some of the movies that we have to look forward to for the rest of the year. And there's 3 in particular that were kind of interesting to me. So we've heard about the Salem's Lot reboot. That's coming this year.
That's James Wan, right?
That's James Wan. And I trust that in his hands, he'll make it something special.
Oh, yeah. I'm here for whatever he comes up with.
Mm-hmm. There's also a reboot of Children of the Corn on the way.
No.
Yep. And, I mean, the original isn't necessarily the greatest film. It's good.
But what about Children of the Corn 3?
Hey, I kind of like 2. you know, so that's kind of interesting. And then the other one, the last one of these big reboots of an older franchise that I'm just kind of scratching my head about is The Exorcist.
Huh.
A new version of The Exorcist.
Who's attached to that?
I don't even know. I just saw it today. I didn't even look in depth on that. We'll talk about that more as time moves on. But I don't know what to think about that. My first instinct is like, how can you remake the greatest horror film of all time? Or you could argue that's a great one of, if not the. But yeah, I don't know. So
we need to have a whole episode on remakes, reboots, because for some reason I'm not super critical in the way that Carrie is on a lot of them. I don't hold anything sacred. I'm like, yeah, you remake it, you reboot it, let's see what it's got.
But I'm a sucker for nostalgia, I know. So, oh, check this out. It's David Gordon Green.
Oh, could go either way. I had some thoughts on the Halloween sequels.
And the first one was amazing. The 2018 Halloween was fantastic. Probably one of the best of the series. Maybe the second or third best in, you know, the Halloween series. So I have hopes for this. I feel like maybe David Gordon Green is best when he does a first. And then just let someone else do the rest of them. So you don't have to wear that because I, looking at that, I think I have some optimism about it.
Oh, I'm in. I'm going to see it. And for what it's worth, Halloween Kills was a real slog for me. The Evil Dies Tonight chant, all that stuff. Halloween Ends, I admit it is objectively not good, but I really, really liked it.
At least, you know, I'm still very conflicted on Halloween Ends, but at least they took some chances and tried something different. And they absolutely did that with Halloween Ends.
I'm just going to say, with Corey. Yeah.
Good old Corey. What you going to do, Corey?
There's a scene involving a trash compactor that is probably my favorite kill of 2022.
So over the top. Yeah, no, that is fun. Here's probably the one I'm most excited about, though, Steph. It's Evil Dead Rise.
What's that?
It's the new Evil Dead film. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was having a talk with a friend about what are the best horror franchises. We're the most consistent and best horror franchises. You could argue that the Scream series is pretty strong and pretty consistent. Not all of them are great, but pretty consistent. I think Evil Dead may be, though, the best horror series when you really think about what they put out. So the first three, Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, absolute classics. Army of Darkness, a lot of fun. So much fun.
The TV show,
three seasons, it's great.
It is really good.
It's really good.
Surprised me.
And then the remake that Fede Alvarez did.
I did think the Evil Dead remake was pretty killer.
It was excellent. And you had Sam Raimi's blessing. A lot of these franchises, they switch studios. You have different stewards over them. But Sam Raimi's been consistently involved with Evil Dead from the beginning until now. In fact, a lot of the filmmakers coming into the Evil Dead series grew up watching the original Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. So he's always been involved, and I think that's why the series feels more consistent stylistically than almost any other franchise. Any others for you?
Well, we did already say we're both pretty psyched about Maxine, the final installment in the X and Pearl trilogy.
Yes.
And Sam Raimi, is this his movie or is it just something he's a part of? But he's teamed up with the Quiet Place writers and they're putting out a movie called 65.
Yes, that's coming out soon. I believe that's coming out either this Friday or next Friday.
Okay, yeah, I want to see that. And I want to see Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is by the director who did the autopsy of Jane Doe.
Which was what a great little out of left field horror film.
Totally. And I guess lastly, I'm very excited about Saw 10.
Oh my gosh. Here we go.
Jigsaw Saw comes back.
Saw 10.
To me, maybe the Saw franchise is the most solid for me, alongside something like Final Destination, because like another franchise not in horror I love, Fast and the Furious, they just keep upping the ante every freaking time. And you're like, you can't do anything else. But they do.
That's true.
Do you want to see someone Saw on a franchise. Melting block of ice, like also on a noose and the radiators hitting the ice, and you think he's going to get out, but then two jumbo hammers of ice come in out of like the wings of the building?
Oh, wow. I will live vicariously through you and hear how it is.
Stop. Bring it on.
Oh, and one last one before we go, or two last, real quick. Renfield, Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Which should be ridiculous, over the top, and fun. Probably lots of CGI blood. And then Ari Aster's new one, Bo is Afraid.
Oh, I haven't even heard about that.
So that's going to be with Joaquin Phoenix, and looks like a really good cast. So, yeah.
What's it about?
I don't even know, and I kind of don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't have to know.
I don't even want to know. I kind of want to go in totally blind on this one and just see what happens.
I am so excited for these movies. It's going to be another good horror year. And there's so many movies that I still haven't seen and have to catch up on.
Same.
My Letterboxd watch list is endless.
It's just growing and growing. There's simply too much to see. You know, it's really hard to catch everything you want to. But yeah, but that one should be a lot of fun. Parker Posey's in it too.
Oh, Parker Posey, an eternal crush up there with Jennifer Jason Leigh.
There you go. Amy Ryan, you got Richard Kind. It's got a fun cast. Nathan Lane.
Michael, oh my goodness.
Michael Gandolfini. Yeah. Patti LuPone's in it. I mean, they're bringing out some real true vets, acting vets. So I'm very curious about that one.
Cool.
So what a year it's going to be.
Yeah, and I guess this wraps up our first episode of the 7th season. If this is the only episode we do, it's still our 7th season, but we're going to do more.
Yeah, there we go. Well, thanks. Whoever is still listening to the show or knows that we even exist still, thanks. And we will see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye.